Welcome to the Gateway to the Smokies podcast. This podcast is about America's most visited national park, the Great Smoky Mountains National Park, and the surrounding towns. This area is filled with ancient natural beauty, a deep storied history, and rich mountain cultures that we explore with weekly episodes. I am Joseph Franklin McElroy, a man of the world, but also with deep roots in these mountains. My family has lived in the Great Smokies for over 200 years. My business is in travel, but my heart is in culture. Today, we're talking about music and fly fishing in the Smokies. But first, I'm going to tell you about our sponsors. So I want you to imagine a place evocative of motor coach, modern and vibrant with a Appalachian feel, a place for adventure and for relaxation. Imagine a place where you can fish in a mountain heritage trout stream, grill the catch on a fire, and eat accompanied by the fine wine or craft beers of this area. Imagine a place with old-time music and world cultural sounds. There is no other place like the Meadowlark Motel in Maggie Valley, North Carolina. Your Smoky Mountain adventure starts with where you stay. The Meadowlark Motel is actually having a traditional mountain heritage event this weekend called Traditional Skills and Naturalist Weekend. And it's going from Friday to Sunday. And they're going to talk about ginseng in the mountain and granny medicine and herbs and explore the lore of the mountains in lectures and wanderings, entertainings. Music. 7 o'clock on music with William Ritter and some Scottish Highland heritage music from Mike Ogletree. And Saturday, there'll be wildflowers and native plants of Appalachia with a tour guide, naturalist Adam Bigelow, who's on this show. We're going to have the healing powers and history of ginseng with novelist and naturalist Jim Hamilton. There's going to be medicinal herbs and granny medicine with herbal naturalists. And there's going to be a program by Tyson Sampson, acclaimed Cherokee naturalist, historian and lecturer. There's going to be an afternoon of woods wandering and discussions with renowned naturalist, tour guide, lecturer, and author Abby Artemisia. And there's going to be a heirloom to seed discussion with acclaimed naturalist, historian, farmer, and musician William River, who was on this show. There's going to be an evening and more on Sunday morning as you're leaving. There's going to be some gospel music and bluegrass, inspired music. And so it's going to be a great weekend. Go to MeadowlarkMotel.com and look under the Smoky Mountain Heritage Center to find out information about getting tickets or just come and stay at the motel and all the guests go free. Today we're talking, like I said, we're talking about music and fly fishing, and we have a great guest. Charles Humphrey III is a Grammy Award-winning songwriter, producer, and musician, and owner of Lux Dumpy Toad Records. In addition to his talents as a musician, Charles is also an expert fly fishing guide and an endurance runner, and resides with his family in Asheville, North Carolina. Hello, Charles.
Hey, Joseph. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing pretty good.
Cool, so, man, thanks for having me on the show. It's an honor to be here.
You know, you're honoring me, actually. I appreciate, you know, I've looked at your work, and you really are a tremendous, you have a tremendous resume, frankly. But you grew up in Greenville, North Carolina, which is out in the east. I think that's where ECU is, right?
Yes, sir. That's
correct. And you loved ball sports and surfing, and you attended the UNC Chapel Hill. I have to put on my Duke hat now.
Oh, please don't do that. Please don't do that. It's all right. Nobody's perfect.
Nobody's perfect. I got the same thing to say about you, but... But you did study classical bass there, so I'll give you a pass. You put on the sophisticated hat a little bit, and international studies, and you focused on economics in Latin America. And your plan was to open a surf shop in Costa Rica. So you ended up a Grammy Award winning musician and living in Asheville, North Carolina. So my big question is, Why did you pick the Smoky Mountains to live in?
Well, the music brought me here for sure. It's a rich cultural area, and I've been playing music full time since college, and it brought me to Asheville. There's a lot to learn. There's a lot to share. There's a lot of places to perform. There's a lot of inspiration in these mountains, and it's also easy to get in other markets, you know, 6 to 8 hours in any direction. You can be in a new musical market, so it's a good place to base if you're a traveling musician as well. But always loved the beach. Always grew up, like I say, fishing and surfing there, but I've absolutely fell in love with the mountains, made it my home, you know, got into running and fishing and music, and I can't imagine living anywhere else now.
And for those of you listening, whether you're going to visit here, you just made a major point. You're probably within this easily of getting to the mountains, right? It's one of the natural wonders of the planet, but you can get here within a few hours in a lot of cases. So Charles, you know, I mentioned you had you have a really great resume, and we'll talk a little bit more about it. But when you were a kid, were you into music? Did you have your own band growing up or something like that?
I started music in middle school in the orchestra, mainly as a way to get out of class, and started on violin and transitioned to the upright bass. Didn't play in high school because I was more into sports. And then my freshman year of college, first week I was there, I had this dream that I was in Carnegie Hall, and my buddy Pearl, who we used to cut up with on the upright bass section in middle school, was showing me how to play the upright bass. And I started remembering all these things I'd learned years ago. It was like a life-changing dream. The very next day, I went out and signed up for classical bass lessons just on my own at the university. And then it turns out, you know, several years later, one of my first gigs touring around with Steve Martin, we actually got to play Carnegie Hall, so it was a dream come true. I thought that was kind of cool.
It is nice when your childhood dreams get to come true. As far as
growing up with music, though, you know, I was around a lot of country music from my grandfather, who had an extensive music collection, and my dad, and I have a younger sister. And if we were misbehaving in the car, the punishment was he'd put on Ernest Tubbs' Waltz Across Texas because we hated it. And that was our punishment. But I kind of learned to love that old song.
So you in college, you did form some friends, relationships with friends. You end up creating your acclaimed band, the Steep Canyon Rangers, and you were with it for 15 years. But you all started that in college. I mean, that's sort of interesting for you to become. Did you feel like you were a professional musician in college?
I think a lot of bands that start out in college start out as friends and have a good launch pad because people come from different backgrounds and people are looking for things to do. You know, I think that's a classic story. Mm-hmm. But I've really had to work at my craft of music and songwriting, especially to hone it to a place and put in your time and travel and learn the business side of things as well as the performance to truly become a professional. But it's always been fun. And, you know, if you're doing something you love, they say you never work a day in your life.
Yeah. But then, you know, then you decided to go out and explore your own creativity in different venues. And that must have been a difficult decision to, you know, that's like a life transition, right? So you went out and thing that was in your youth, and then you started approaching middle age. Let's not say you were middle age, approaching it, and you really went out and developed other creative venues, other things that you're doing. Was it difficult to make that transition for you?
Well, Songs from the Road Band started in 2004 as a recording project based around myself, Mark Schimmick, and Sam Horton, who are still in the band and kind of been the core. And we've always supplemented it with friends and other local all-stars to put out. It started as a recording band where we would just record songs and share them to the world. And then about 5 or 6 years ago, we had the opportunity to put the band on the road full time. So we did that. And it's been very rewarding. In 2019, we played over 200 shows in 1 year. We were really beaten down the road. And then, as everyone knows, COVID hit, and that put the brakes on everything. And that was a time of transition for me. I'd always song writ, and a lot of it was virtual, but during that time, I think I wrote like 140 songs, just all co-written with other people from right here where I'm sitting now, just like this on a Zoom meeting. Uh-huh. And that also opened up the opportunity to become a professional fishing guide, which is something I'd always pursued as a hobby before. So there were some, those were some of the blessings of the strange times we've been coming through recently.
So, you know, I wanted to ask you a question about the name of the band. I'm always fascinated by names. And you called it, you guys called it Songs from the Road Band instead of a Road Band. Is there?
Yeah, you know, yeah, it's an interesting story. The first record was just called Songs from the Road because they were songs that I'd written while traveling the road. And then we kept making records, so it kind of became Songs from the Road Band by default. And then we would title the different records. So I don't think I ever truly got a chance to just sit down and think of, hey, what really cool band name would make this band extremely popular if nobody's ever heard of it? So we might have missed the boat on that opportunity, but that's where the name came from.
Well, it's interesting because you just mentioned you went on the road 200 times, right? So you sort of named your band the brand that you are living. It's like an authentic, you're like an authentic brand. Right.
Yes, we are the troubadours. We have probably slept on your couch or traveled in your van or bus or train or plane. And, well, it's an inspiring way of life. It's a hard way of life. I don't think I ever want to go back to doing that many shows a year. Yeah. Now we're kind of stepping back and try to, you know, stay relevant in certain markets, work on the records and play the festivals and bigger venues.
Well, cool. So, we're going to take a break right now. When we come back, we want to talk more about your music, and then we'll get into that fly.
Yeah, man, let's do it. Sounds good.
Talk about. All
right. Have you ever thought of reinventing yourself? Are you looking to create a new life's journey? Hi, I'm Kevin Barbaro, host of Coffee Talk XL every Tuesday night, 5, 8 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc. Tune in live to hear me and my guests from a variety of different backgrounds. As a former college coach and a current full-time actor and owner of multiple companies, my show is as eclectic as my life. That's Coffee Talk XL every Tuesday night, 8 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Are you interested in having a better relationship with yourself, others, and God? Greetings. I'm your host, Dr. George Andow, for the show A Journey Through Into Awareness. On my show, we journey into the awareness that the mind of God is the true seat of our personal consciousness. We join together each Monday at 7 p.m., so tune in on Talk Radio NYC.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
This is Joseph Franklin McElroy back with the Gateway to the Smokies podcast and my guest, Charles Humphrey III. So, Charles, I was reading on your website and there was a quote that said that your band, Songs from the Road Band, is considered the epitome of a newgrass band. So, tell me, what is newgrass?
Man, you know, that's an interesting question. I guess, well, bluegrass is a relatively new form of music, started in 1946 with Bill Monroe and the other first generation pioneers like the Stanley Brothers and Earl Scruggs. And there was a band that came along, Newgrass Revival, and they seemed a little different, a little more aggressive style, played a lot of covers, and you know, they were considered just, you know, for the time, just groundbreaking, and have always been one of my favorite bands, still are. And you go back and listen to that stuff now, and it's almost like it sounds traditional compared to some of the new stuff that's coming out. I mean, you've got pioneers like Green Sky Bluegrass and Billy Strings that are using acoustic instruments, but basically playing rock and roll and turning people on to bluegrass that have never even heard of the genre, which is good for everyone. You know, the rising tide raises all the boats, and we kind of fall somewhere in between there. We've got a deep respect for traditional music and incorporated into our sound, as well as bringing in outside of music and doing it in a style. And our records have typically been more traditional than the live show. Sometimes in the live show, we'll incorporate big lights, and our favorite crowd to play for are just people that love music, not people that are there to see 30 bands that are all considered the same brand of music, which is fine too. So I guess it's based around the songwriting and the harmony singing and the improvised solos within the format of the song. So I don't know what's new grass and what's old grass, but you know, we're trying to bring something new to it and keep the music alive, basically spread joy through music, make people happy, let them forget about their everyday worries and when they're spending their hard earned money to see some live music.
I love that. I mean, you know, I think that the essence is, you know, is there's a joy in bluegrass that is, you know, catching. You know, we at the motel, we play, when people come in, there's bluegrass playing, and, you know, you see people just light up with it.
That is a great spot too. Meadowlark is right there on the river in Maggie Valley. It's a really neat spot.
Cool. So, you know, I've had a number of bluegrass musicians come through here, and you know, one or two of them mentioned that, you know, there's a real deep respect for tradition, but sometimes it becomes also a hard and fast rule. Somebody actually used the phrase, there's a bluegrass mafia out there that won't let you introduce new things. Do you find that sometimes some of the stuff that you guys want to do new is hard to introduce?
Well, not anymore. I mean, I've been doing this for 25 years and, you know, played upright bass for 20 of that. Now I'm playing electric bass, and I don't feel like I have to prove anything to anybody, but I will tell you this. When I was a young man, I fought like hell to get into that traditional scene. And once I got there, I fought like hell to get out of it.
So you fought to get into your own prison?
I was just fishing with my good buddy, David Long, yesterday. And he was like, Charles, you remember the first time we met? I was like, not really. Tell me. Remind me. And he said, we were at this festival. I was playing with the Wildwood Valley Boys. And the Stanley Brothers was there. Jim and Jesse were there. Ralph Stanley was there. I was like, man, that's awesome. I've forgotten all about that. And I told him that line. He had about the same reaction as you.
Well, no, it's true. I think that a lot of times, you know, when you're young, you really work to get into acceptance in a certain area. And then all of a sudden you realize, boy, it's constraining me from what I really want to do. Yeah. So I'm glad you managed to make your way out, because you know, you're doing some great work now.
Well, you know, we like to have a foot in all places.
Yeah. So you're doing all this stuff, touring, writing, set, you know, you went, you know, all that. Right. I know you did a lot of the important songs in the past that you've been known for. You also started a record label. What does Lux Dumpy Toad Records represent, and what's the name stand for?
Yeah, that's a good question. Another one of those situations where maybe not enough time was put into selecting the name. Well, I had the first Songs from the Road Band record coming out, and it was about to be released, and I was having to register all the songs. And I didn't have time to vet the names. There's a kind of a timeline with when you're choosing your publishing company names, where you turn in what your top choices are, and if it's already taken, you didn't get it. And I was pretty sure that name hadn't been taken. It was just some strange saying my best friend from childhood had made up one night when I was visiting him in Wilmington, North Carolina. And I was like, I have no idea what that means, but it's kind of fun to say. I was like, nobody else has ever thought of this. I'm going to put this out as the publishing company, which became the record label for a lot of independent releases. And that's the story behind the name.
Oh, right. Well, it's as good as any, right? Yeah. Sometimes the over-intellectualizing names make them unfun. So where you're located in Asheville?
Live right here in West Asheville, North Carolina. Mm-hmm. Two children. Spent a lot of time in Brevard, North Carolina. And then with the fishing, I'm traveling a whole lot with High Trout is the name of the company I work with. And we guide in North Georgia, Western North Carolina, and Eastern Tennessee. So there's a lot of getting up at 5 a.m. and driving 2 or 3 hours to be on the river by sunrise and fishing all day and driving back. But boy, do I love it.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, life with diverse passions is, I think, is really, you know, makes the life that you want to lead, because, you know, you can have some success in multiple endeavors, and some of them are big successes, but some are successes for yourself. And those are just as important.
Absolutely.
Is there any success that you've had just for yourself, you know, related to, say, fishing that that you don't talk about a lot that you really feel proud of?
Well, I've taken a lot of leaps of faith. Few years ago, I bought a saltwater boat and fished a lot in Oriental North Carolina, and enjoyed doing stuff like that for old drum and black drum and speckled trout and flounder and all kinds of stuff, and really made some good friends over at Endurance Seafood, the Bruno family. They're commercial fishermen in the area, and he kind of showed me how to hang my own net and do some net fishing and with a recreational license, and just trying to. It came from a love of the area and wanting to learn about the fishing industry there. And then, you know, going from primarily 99% Euro nymphing fly fishing style to undertaking the drift boat and guiding from the boat and have people float. You know, that was a leap of faith too, and I really enjoyed that. So I think whenever I try something new that I don't know about, I kind of go all in on it and just try to learn as much as I can, spend as much time about it. And then when it comes kind of second nature, you start to feel comfortable with it. I think that's a personal success.
Mm. Is there, do you find, you know, fly fishing in a way is almost meditative, and you're on the river by yourself. And then I imagine that songwriting most of the time is sort of a meditative by yourself. Is there a relationship that you find? Is there a way of thinking?
I guess you can do both by yourself, but I actually prefer to do both with other people. I mean, I love fishing with other people. I have as much fun as watching somebody who's just learning or someone catch a personal best fish. Mm-hmm. Just watching them meet one of their goals as I do doing it myself, because I kind of get to fish all the time. So I love seeing other people do it. And when it comes to songwriting, I really like to co-write, because you've got this camaraderie, kind of like you and I are doing here. We're doing this show. We're working off each other. We're going off our first impressions. And so you're creating something out of nothing, and you've got more first impressions to filter and shape into a song that you both can be proud of. So, you know, there may be the guy out there who only fishes by himself and only uses one dry fly and only matches the hatch and, you know, whatever. But there's also people that like to fish together. So I think you can get out of it what you put into it, or shape it to what you want it to be.
Cool. Yeah, that reminds me, there was a big thing where there's a guy that was in somewhere in the South who asked that he couldn't find somebody to go fishing with him. And he got an overwhelming response from guys all over the South to be his fishing buddy. And they didn't care that he was gay. So it was a really heartwarming thing to see, you know, and counter to what, sometimes the Southern stereotype is. Because it seems that, you know, fishing crosses all boundaries and all. Yeah.
Yeah. I think fishing and music brings people together in general, Just like you say, crossing boundaries or however you want to look at it, different lifestyles, kind of the same thing, the experience I've had with the ultra running too.
Yeah.
You have people going out there running these, you know, marathons, 50K, 50-miler events, 100-miler events, and they come from all walks of life, you know, all just nobody's alike, but they have this one thing in common, which is ultra running, and they're usually pretty decent people because they have at least enough discipline to train their body to be able to accomplish a goal like that. And once you get out there and meet them for the first time and you're suffering together, you have this like instant bond and you just make all these great friends from different walks of life. And that's another great thing about the Smoky Mountains in this area, is that just like there are thousands of miles of great trout streams of all varieties of fishing and styles of trout, there's equally as many mountain trails and places to run and explore.
So I'm sensing the common theme. You love co-creation, right? And you know, so cool. Who's your favorite co-writers?
Jim Lauderdale. I'm sure people have heard of him, the King of Broken Hearts, and I write with a guy in Nashville, Marty Dotson. We've had some success. He and Nick Dauphiné wrote a song that's been at number one for 5 weeks in a row now on the Bluegrass Today Grassicana chart. It's a single that'll be out on the upcoming record from Songs from the Road Band titled Amarillo Blue. Sean Camp, Charlie Chamberlain, Phil Barker, Tom Utes. There's so many people I write with. I'm sure I'm leaving some names out. But
well, who haven't you wrote with that you want to write with?
Oh man, that's a good question. You know, I kind of want to write with whoever who sells a lot of records.
Me too. I want to write. I'll let them do all the writing and I'll take credit.
That's the ticket, man. I'll tell your listeners right now, if you want to get cuts, write with the artist.
Yeah, cool. That's a secret. All right, when we come back, let's explore more about your fishing and your long distance endurance stuff, which are all both incredible endeavors.
Sounds good. Let's do it.
Do you feel uninformed about menopause and how it impacts on your life? Hi, I'm Pat Duckworth, women's health strategist and host of the Hot Women Rock radio show, empowering women leaders at menopause. Join me every Thursday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. UK time on talkradio.nyc for interviews with inspirational women who will share their top tips to rock your world.
Hey everybody, it's Tommy D, the Nonprofit Sector Connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host a program, Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a business owner? Do you want to be a business owner? Do you work with business owners? Hi, I'm Stephen Fry, your small and medium-sized business or SMB guy, and I'm the host of the new show, Always Friday. While I love to have fun on my show, we take those Friday feelings of freedom and clarity to discuss popular topics on the minds of SMBs today. Please join me and my various special guests on Friday at 11 a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Do you run or are ready to open your own business? Hi, I'm Jeremiah Fox. I've been operating and opening small business for the last 25 years, and I'm the host of the new show, The Entrepreneurial Web. Tune in every Friday at noon Eastern Time for insights and stories on the nuances of running small business right here on Fridays at noon, talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Howdy, this is Joseph Franklin McElroy back with the Gateway to the Smokies podcast and my guest, Charles Humphrey III. So Charles, I would be remiss not to mention that you're planning, along with Bob Plott, who is the general manager of the Metal Arc Smoky Mountain Heritage Center, an exciting new songwriter camp.
We are. Bob and I have been talking a lot about that, and we were very excited about it. He shares an enthusiasm for all things relating to the culture of Western North Carolina and loves songwriting. And so I jumped at the opportunity to host an event in such a beautiful place where you've got the built-in lodging and venue and everything. And I think that's going to happen in the spring, potentially April. And there's a good chance that you'll see myself and some other people, like potentially Jim Lauderdale, Sean Camp, and we'll bring in a handful of writers and lodge them and feed them and work with them and share stories and show them how the recording process works, talk about song pitching, jam together, do, you know, guitar swaps. And it's going to be a really neat opportunity for people that love the craft of songwriting.
Cool. And I think you said you might be setting up a little studio to do some, put together something while they're there.
I think it's important for these people to see the process of how a work tape or a demo tape might be made. So we'll definitely let everybody get a taste of that as well. And, you know, I'm sure there'll be some songs born out of being at the camp and the writers that are there, which is always exciting.
Now, do you think it's mostly just for real aspiring songwriters, or serious fans, aficionados be?
Man, I think any level would be welcome, you know, just with the range of talent we have there. Obviously, everyone could get something out of it, but, you know, it could just be like, I don't know. To me, it would be like going to Disney World if I was a songwriter. You know, the opportunity to work with people of that caliber in such a neat location. I mean, it could be a total beginner, or it could be an accomplished songwriter that, you know, is looking for a getaway and wants to be around some great people and create some music.
No, I think that being involved in the creative process, even if you don't actually have professional ambitions, is one of the most beautiful experiences you can have in terms of, finding some life experiences.
Absolutely. Wow. You know, people that love music or want to learn how to write or just curious about it. I mean, everybody's got a story. Everybody's got inspiration. Everybody could have input. And when you're co-writing, you know, you draw on the strengths of your other writers. And it may be somebody that has, you know, got 50 number one hits, or it may be somebody, it's their first time, but they've got a great story about their grandma or grandpa, and it could turn into a great song.
Cool. And, you know, we have a nice little trout stream right there on the property called the John.
Yeah, man. I saw that. It is a nice little trout stream.
It's a mountain heritage stream. So maybe you can, one of the breaks could be taking some people out there and doing some fly fishing, right?
Absolutely. That is a wonderful area of the country to fly fish in.
Oh, yeah. So you have actually, you've mentioned it before, but you've become quite an expert. I mean, people talk about it. You're an expert in fly fishing. And actually in guided tours around North Carolina. What spurred that decision?
Well, Dan Sasser, who started High Trout Guides, contacted me on the recommendation of a mutual friend, and that is a guide and fly shop owner in Western North Carolina. And we hit it off right off the bat. You know, we really got along, really shared a passion and a common vision of not just, you know, running a fishing business, but making it an experience and focusing on education and really, you know, making it something special for the people that come out there, you know. And it's just been a blessing to work with him and work with somebody that is so enthusiastic about fishing and so knowledgeable. And they want to teach the Euro style of fishing, which some people call it tight line nymphing or contact nymphing. And basically you're not making big casts like Brad Pitt and a river runs through it. You've got a long lightweight rod with thin line, hardly indicator and small bugs. And you're working on getting a perfect dead drift to fool these huge fish. You know, they probably eat 200 or 300 of these tiny, tiny bugs all year round. And by not using corks and bobbers and all this other stuff, you're not scaring them, and you're kind of dissecting the river, and then you hook into these beautiful fish and have a chance to land them properly. We teach people how to do that and then how to handle them and helpfully release them to be caught another day. And it's
what, What's a big trout in these trout streams in the mountains?
Well, it's interesting, and we do everything. You know, some people want to go up into the mountains and catch wild fish, or you know, fish that have been born in the river, and they love the colors of the beautiful rainbows and brookies and browns, which can be smaller fish, but just as rewarding because you know they were born in the wild and are beautiful colors. And then there's areas of the rivers that are stocked with massive fish, and there's some areas that are wild fisheries, and then there's some areas that are privately managed waters. And so we'll do whatever the client wants to do, and I love it all. So I don't want to offend any group of fishermen by saying one size fish, one style of fishing, one, you know, this or that is better than the other, because we love it all. We'll do whatever they want to do. But I do have an affinity for fishing in North Georgia, which is some of the private managed waters, and the fish are very large. They're huge, and it's an opportunity for someone who's never caught a large trout to go out there and learn how to properly land a fish of a lifetime on lightweight tackle. And you'll get to do it a lot the whole day long. So that way, you know, if you're back in your wild stream and you hook the biggest fish you've ever caught, you'll know how to land them and not just break them off. And it's
we know at the Jonathan Creek at the Middle Lark, I caught a 22 inch fish rainbow once. So that was huge, that
little creek.
That was big. It's an interesting creek. It gets stocked, but it also has great little brown trout in there that are natural.
Right. Those rewards. I've been fishing a lot over in Eastern Tennessee, and because it's so hot now in Western North Carolina, you don't want to fish in temperatures or areas where the fish are going to get stressed out from catching them, and the water being too low, the temperature being too high. So we've been fishing a lot in dam released waters over in Tennessee, where the water stays cold year round.
Yeah.
And that's another advantage of being able to get people on the boat too, is you can fish in the middle of the summer where the waters are still fishing well and they're healthy and you're not going to hurt the fish.
Now you're planning on maybe doing a fly fishing camp over at the middle of the
Heritage Center. We're going to do that. We're going to work with Bob Plott and have high trout involved. And we're going to do some areas of education where we teach all things fly fishing, and then we're going to take the people and go out and put them on the water and just have a big old time catching fish and telling lies, and maybe have some music and videos or something, wind up the night, campfire maybe. That's going to be another great event for the community, for people that are interested in fly fishing.
So how do people find more about this trout adventures that you take people on?
HighTrout.com. You can contact the company through the website, through Instagram, through Facebook. You can also contact me directly. All the information and rates, with the exception of private water fees, are on the website. And we would love to entertain you. Like, we have guaranteed adventure, guaranteed education, and I like to say a high chance of catching quality fish. But you know, you can't control the weather and you can't control the bite.
Well, I want to talk finally about this. So I want to talk about this. I want to talk about this. I read that you were inspired by Christopher McDougall's bestseller, Born to Run. And then you've now become a massive endurance runner. What was it about that book then? And what do you do?
I mean, I've got into it totally by mistake. I picked that book up in the airport, and it changed my life. It's about his experience running with this tribe of natural born runners down in Mexico, and they run barefooted. So I bought these toe shoes and went out and ran like 7 or 9 miles. I was like, oh, wow, this is amazing. And so I was like, oh, I'm going to do a marathon. I could never do that. Well, eventually I found out that if you're running around here, toe shoes aren't going to cut it because there's a lot of rocks. So I got a different pair of shoes. I did a marathon, and I thought I was going to finish in like 5 hours or something. Ended up doing it in like 3.5. I had no idea. And so I did another one, and I had to go faster than the first one. And after the second one, I was like, hold on a second. This running fast stuff is for the birds. I'm never doing this. I want to see how far I can go, not how fast I can go. So I went from marathon to 50K to 50 miler to 24 hour race to 100 miler. Eventually got in the lottery of the Western States Endurance Run, which is kind of like the Super Bowl of ultra running. They have a certain number of pro spots, and then a small amount of people that get in by raffle, and you run
from Squaw Valley to Auburn, California, through the Sierra Nevada mountains. And it's 100 miles. The year I did it, it was over 100 degrees the whole way. And the first 16 miles of it was snow. It was a very good challenge, to say the least. We're going along and jumping in these rivers just to keep our body temperature down, which of course leads to your shorts rubbing on your legs and all kinds of chafing and crazy stuff. But I managed to make it through, and that was one of the highlights of my running career. The other thing I like about the running is, touched on it before, was the community. But I've been able to give back to the community a little bit. Like, I'm the race director for a 50K ultra marathon that happens in Brevard, North Carolina, and it benefits the Candade Foundation, which is the nonprofit of Oscar Blues. And they do a lot of things like trail maintenance, flood relief, Tunes Ambassadors. The band and I help them get instruments to kids in schools that need them. And we have not done the Hullabaloo 50K the past 2 years because the Forest Service has not been doing permits out of safety concerns. But we hope that it'll be back in November of 2022.
Wow. Well, how do you find that internal? I mean, what is the training like? How do you manage to do that?
You run a lot. The biggest thing, without, just talking too much, is if you're going to train for a long distance, you don't have to go out and run that distance before. You just have to simulate what it feels like to run that deep in the race. So if I was going to train for something crazy like that, 100 mile or even more, a lot of the stuff I'd done wasn't even events. It was just kind of local routes that local runners like to do. The key is to do a back-to-back run where, say, you'll go out and run 20 some miles, and then the next day go out and do the same amount. And that second day you're running on very tired legs, and that simulates what it's like to run after you've run 60, 70, 80 or 90 miles. And once you can train your body to operate in those conditions, then it's just a matter of staying hydrated and fueled. And you just, if you can, not get sick, you can just keep going. It's not like you get exponentially more tired.
What's the best trail in the Smoky Mountains for somebody wanting to do a long run?
My favorite Western North Carolina running adventure is something that was started by Adam Hill. And he calls it the Pitchell. It's when you run from Mount Pisgah to Mount Mitchell, and you just take the Mountains to Sea Trail the whole way. It's 68 miles, and it is a beast of a run. I mean, it really is a challenge, and it's kind of an accomplishment if you live in this area as a runner to say that you've completed that route in one effort. And that's my favorite, probably one of my favorite ones around here. But there are thousands. There literally are so many great places to run.
Cool. When we come back, I want to finish up a little bit about you and then things you're doing in the future.
Thanks, Joseph.
Are you passionate about the conversation around racism? Hi, I'm Reverend Dr. TLC, host of the Dismantle Racism Show, which airs every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc. Join me and my amazing guests as we discuss ways to uncover, dismantle, and eradicate racism. That's Thursdays at 11 o'clock a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a small business trying to navigate the COVID-19 related employment laws? Hello, I'm Eric Sauver, employment law business law attorney and host of the new radio show, Employment Law Today. On my show, we'll have guests to discuss the common employment law challenges business owners are facing during these trying times. Tune in on Tuesday evenings from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
Podcast Gateway to the Smokies. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 7. Every episode is dedicated to memorable experiences in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park and surrounding areas. This show features experts and locals who will expound upon the richness of culture, history, and adventure that awaits you in the Smokies. Tune in every Tuesday from 6 p.m. to 7 on talkradio.nyc.
Do you love or are you intrigued about New York City and its neighborhoods? I'm Jeff Goodman, host of Rediscovering New York, a weekly show that showcases New York's history and its extraordinary neighborhoods. Every Tuesday live at 7 p.m., we focus on a particular neighborhood and explore its history, its vibe, its feel, and its energy. Tune in live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Howdy, this is Joseph Franklin McElroy back with the Gateway to the Smokies podcast and my esteemed guest, Charles Humphrey III. So Charles, before I go too much further, I saw this little, you know, almost like an aside on your resume that says you're an honorary Kentucky colonel. How did that happen? That's like a really great thing.
Yeah, man, that is a nice little feather to have in the hat. I was traveling with a group of musicians down on the Delta Queen riverboat, and I met a horse guy. He gives talks about horse racing. He bets on horses. I've been to the Kentucky Derby with him. His name was Jim Claypool, and we made a great impression on him that week, and he told the governor that these guys had to be Kentucky colonels. So we all got asked to be Kentucky colonels based on our time on the Delta Queen riverboat we spent with him, and it has been a lifelong friendship. And you know, going to the Kentucky Derby and being a part of that was a great experience as well. So it just happened out of chance and out of luck, just making friends. You know, it's almost like who you know, and so. You know, out there, talk to people, be a good person, be a nice person, give back to the community, and work hard. Good things will happen.
So, you know, this show is a little bit of a travelogue. So I mentioned this earlier, and you live in West Asheville, which I think is an interesting place.
Yes, it's changed.
I'd like to ask you, it's got a restaurant there I love called Jargon, which, you know, some excellent food. It's got
right down the street.
Dip. Yeah. So if I like to ask, what is a day itinerary? And we don't have a lot of time, but you know, where would you send somebody to breakfast in West Asheville?
Oh, you'd either have to go to Sunny Point Cafe or Biscuit Head.
You got them both. I love those places.
That's a toss up. Yeah. But you know, really, the line's going to probably be too long at both.
Yeah.
And so you would have to go somewhere else, which
there's now in West Asheville an Early Girl, which has got a pretty good, and they don't have a big line yet.
Yeah, it's hard to go wrong. Those are the two most popular ones, though.
Yeah. And then what do you do in West Asheville during the morning?
Well, most of my mornings I wake up before the sun comes up and leaving West Asheville.
go out somewhere, right? Yeah.
Driving to Tennessee, driving to Maggie Valley, driving to the Tuckasegee, driving to Brevard, driving to
Helen, it's a great Georgia. Place to get to a lot of things, yeah.
I do live here, and I do have children. My son and I really like to go to the Retrocade, which is a pinball arcade and video games. He really enjoys that, which is kind of a neat thing to have in the neighborhood.
And where would you take him to lunch then?
Where would he go to lunch? Well, I like the wings at Westville Pub pretty good. Pizza Mine's got a good salad I like. The Whale is a nice bottle shop. A friend of mine owns that place. It's right next door to Zia Taqueria, which is a nice Mexican place.
So that's good. You give him some good options. How about the afternoon? What would you spend the afternoon with your son?
You might go tubing down the French Broad River or go over to Carrier Park and play on the playground. Yeah. Something like that, maybe. He's really into the video games, though.
And then you drop your son off to you know, the grandma or whatever, and now you're going
to
go out.
No, he'll want to go to Orbit's DVD. Like a comic book video rental shop. He loves that place. It's a really cool store.
And now you drop the son off with the grandma or the babysitter or whatever, and you and your wife go out for a dinner. Where do you take her?
Well, my girlfriend also is a big fan of Jargon. She likes the charcuterie plate there.
Oh, yeah.
Where else do we go? Bull and Beggar is nice. I think we just got a gift certificate
for
Curate in Asheville. But we cook a lot at the house too. Asheville's amazing. The culinary experiences here are really great.
And then the evening places are just too many to mention, right? In terms of where to go in the evening.
Oh yeah, yeah. For like live music and stuff like that. We've got that have always been here, like the Grey Eagle and Asheville Music Hall, and the best thing to do is get the local paper and see if there's something going on you're interested in and give it a shot.
So what's in your future? I mean, what plans do you have? I guess you got a new album maybe coming out. What else?
We do. Yeah, we've released 3 singles off of it so far. Hope to have the record finished by the first quarter of next year. The fall fishing season is about to fire back up, which is October and November. So we're taking a lot of reservations for the private water. And then all the other days will be filled up with public water, wade and float trips. Going to go do some fishing for Old Drum in September. Going to go to the beach for a week in Thanksgiving and fish on the coast with some family. And then, you know, we kind of get into the holidays, but I'm so ready for the fall. The leaves are starting to change. It's just a little bit warm. It's like just hanging on a little.
Yeah.
I was still getting 85, 90 where I'm ready for, you know, 75, 80. I'd take that any day. I'm very excited about the fall. It's just going to be great, great fishing. The band's got some neat things coming up. We host a festival in Johnson City called Stonefly Fest. That's October 8th and 9th. And just today we announced Asheville Wintergrass, which we host. It's at One World Brewing West, and that's the first weekend in December, the 4th and 5th, I believe. It's a Saturday, Sunday. It'll be us performing with special guests Jim Lauderdale and Andy Buckner. But if you visit songsfromtheroadband.com, you can see all the musical events. But there are some things we're very excited about. We're going to kind of close the year out strong and look forward to the releasing the new record next year.
Cool. And how do they follow? How do people follow you? What did they get? Where's the best way?
Well, if you can find my name, Charles Humphrey III, you can find me on Facebook or Instagram. You can find the band at songsfromtheroadband.com. You can find the fishing company at hightrout.com. I'm pretty easy to find, honestly. People can kind of figure out where I'm going to be throughout the band schedule and the fishing. So it's no secret. I'm not hiding out for anybody.
All right. Well, you know, Charles, this has been one of the most fun interviews I've had. I've enjoyed
this. Thanks for having me on, Joseph. I really appreciate it. It's been a pleasure talking to you. I can't believe we've been on here for an hour. It seems like we've just been talking for about 5 or 10 minutes.
And it's good. It's been a very good conversation. So thank you. Shout out. This podcast is also sponsored by Smokey's Adventure, Smokey's Plural Adventure, singular.com. And it's an outdoor, it focuses on outdoor recreation along with music and entertainment. And it provides information on lodging, family entertainment, events, conventions, honeymoons, and more. The goal of that site is to become the leading information portal on the Smoky Mountains. If you need maps, if you need guides, if you need information on exploring the Smoky Mountain area, that's the place to go. We are part of the TalkRadio.nyc network, which is a network that provides a lot of live podcasts about various subjects. The one after this explores the city of New York, where I split time between North Carolina and New York. And it's, you know, so it's a great podcast to balance your urban with your rural areas, and get a full picture of life in these United States, which is a wonderful place to live. I thank you all for being here. Next week, we will have Aaron Mahoney on the Gateway to the Smokies podcast, who is part of a fourth generation of restaurateurs in North Carolina. with a fabulous family restaurant that's pretty famous in the area. And she'll talk about the restaurant business and food business in North Carolina. You can find more about this podcast at gatewaytothesmokies.fun or facebook.com/gatewaytothesmokiespodcast. And I look forward to seeing you next week at from 6 to 7 on talkradio.nyc on Tuesday night. Thank you. And thank you, Charles.
Thanks, Joseph. See you later.
NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Did you know that nearly one in five adults in the U.S. battles mental illness? Hi, my name is Albert Dabba. I'm the host of the show Extra Innings. Extra Innings, I discuss the topics of wellness, mental health, and the experience of surviving multiple suicides within my family. Listen live every Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern to Extra Innings for discussions with sports figures, artists, mental health professionals, and many others. That's Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc. In a post-COVID world, you may have many unanswered questions regarding your health. Are you looking to live a healthier lifestyle? Do you have a desire to learn more about mental health and enhance your quality of life? Or do you just want to participate in self-understanding and awareness? I'm Frank R. Harrison, host of Frank About Health, and each Thursday, I will tackle these questions and work to enlighten you. Tune in every Thursday at 5 p.m. on talkradio.nyc, and I will be Frank About Health to advocate for all of us.
Do you love or are you intrigued about New York City and its neighborhoods? I'm Jeff Goodman, host of Rediscovering New York, a weekly show that showcases New York's history and its extraordinary neighborhoods. Every Tuesday live at 7 p.m., we focus on a particular neighborhood and explore its history, its vibe, its feel, and its energy. Tune in live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Are you passionate about the conversation around racism? Hi, I'm Reverend Dr. TLC, host of the Dismantle Racism Show, which airs every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc. Join me and my amazing guests as we discuss ways to uncover, dismantle, and eradicate racism. That's Thursdays at 11 o'clock a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Have you ever thought of reinventing yourself? Are you looking to create a new life's journey? Hi, I'm Kevin Barbaro, host of Coffee Talk XL every Tuesday night, live, 8 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc. Tune in live to hear me and my guests from a variety of different backgrounds. As a former college coach and a current full-time actor and owner of multiple companies, my show is as eclectic as my life. That's Coffee Talk XL every Tuesday night, 8 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.